Tonight we are on an Into Action. We covered, I think, one paragraph last week, and we reviewed a couple things that occurred to me. I'm always learning and seeing new things. That's what's so exciting about the spiritual journey. It never gets old unless you aren't seeking, and you're not being open-minded and willing. But I was looking at the big book, and I was looking at the circle and the triangle, which we don't talk about much. It's the circle and the triangle was the AA symbol, but they lost the copyright to it a few years ago, and other people use it. But this was AA's symbol. It's an old ancient symbol, and it was introduced in 1955 by Bill W. at the convention, as symbolizing the whole deal. And it's three things on the triangle: unity, recovery, and service. And they're in the triangle, and then there's a circle around it because it binds us together. And to me, this meeting embodies those three principles, because we're here together in a fellowship. We're here together. This unity is the fellowship, the camaraderie, the common peril that holds us together. But it's a three-legged stool, and just being in the fellowship, if you don't have the other two pieces, your stool is going to be very weak. And we've gotten away from this concept of all three things. The recovery is what Maddie read tonight. It's the program. And a lot of people say, I'm in the program, but they go to meetings. The meetings is the unity and the fellowship. The program is the steps. And in the beginning, the fellowship, the unity, was to bring people to the program to do the steps. And then they were going to be of service to someone else and bring them to the fellowship and to the program. And that's how it was designed in 1939. In fact, you went to the recovery program before you went to the meeting, and you did your third step upstairs at Dr. Bob's house before, and they voted on whether you were serious or not before they let you come to the meeting. It's changed now. I think it's changed, not good or bad. We have so many people coming in, seeing the young people today celebrating, especially young women coming here and feeling comfortable, getting time. It's truly a miracle. And we have to be, have to have the AA available to help people like this to come in. And so one of the reasons I started this meeting was so people would do the program, so that when somebody new came in, they could work with them and service and do the program with them, so they could help somebody else, so they didn't have to die. And so I think it embodies all three parts of the triangle. The Into Action chapter, something else that occurred to me. We read the first paragraph last week. I'll read it again. Into action, it doesn't say into thinking, and it doesn't say to what do I think about the action. It's into action. Now, does that mean that everything prior to chapter 6 was an action? No. It's if you admit to yourself, that's an act. If you come to believe, that's an act. If you make a decision, it's an action. The fourth step is all an action to get ready to do chapter 6. So all the information up to 72 is to prepare you now to do the last six steps, and then step 12 is working with others. And you can't carry this message unless you've done this. And then a lot of people say, well, what is the message? Well, carry this message is, if you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, we have a program of recovery for you. And it worked for me. I can't tell you what's going to work for you, but it worked for me. It worked for others in the room. And so that's the message, is if you're new. Get involved in all three parts of the triangle, and then tell us how it's working for you. And then we talk about the fifth step, and I'm going to read it here. It says, having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? And the fifth step is implied that you've done the fourth step, obviously. And it says, we've been trying to get a new attitude that might be step two, willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. A new relationship with our Creator would be step three, in which my Creator will be my Creator, and I will be his servant. And I'm not going to be playing the role of the Creator anymore in my life, and I'm not going to play God. And to discover the obstacles in my path to having God direct my life and access to God's power. And the obstacles in my path are those things that block me from God's power. And they're not physical things, they're things in my mind, they're things I believe, and they're not true. So step four and five is about obtaining the truth. I think in Scripture it says God is truth. Is that right, Gary? Gary's my theological. God is truth, and we want to live on the truth, and that's where God is. And when we're living on things that aren't true, like my resentments and my fears and harmful conduct, there's no God in that picture. And so we want to face and be rid of the obstacles in our path, and we do that in steps four. And then we have admitted certain defects. Those are the things that we look at in what's called the fourth column. When we're angry, we look at who we're angry at, why we're angry, what was threatened, what in my self-will was threatened, not being in God's will. And then after we say the prayer, we forgive, and we see the people in a different angle, we look at my mistakes. And these are the things that are blocking me from God. It's not them. It's not what they did to me. It's how I see it. And I see it because I'm either being selfish, dishonest, fearful, inconsiderate, or self-seeking. Those are the five major character defects described in the big book. We have our card, which was a whole bunch of them. And these are the character defects of self-will. And when Phil was talking, whenever I'm bothered by anything, one of these character defects is being triggered. And they're always being triggered when I'm back into self playing God. So playing God automatically triggers, I see things this way, and then I get angry or I get fearful, and even worse, I do horrible things, horrible conduct in relationships and with others. And so when you do step four, the big book implies that God's with you the whole time because they're prayers. You're asking God to save you from being angry. You're asking God to remove your fear. You're asking God to mold your insane sex ideal. So it's implied that while you're doing step four, you have God in that relationship with him, because you said the third step prayer. And it said on page 71, it says, we hope you're now convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. And so the way the big book's set up, and the way the fifth step five is laid out, you're admitting to God, yourself, and another human being. And when you're doing the steps, if you're doing them the way the big book says, you have God with you. That's why there's no amen at the end of the third step prayer. The amen's at the end of the seventh step prayer. You're with God the whole time you're doing step four. And so it says, we have admitted certain defects. We've looked at that. I've ascertained the rough way what the trouble is. I've put my finger in the weak items in my personal inventory. Now, the way the big book's laid out, you do all that, and then you come and you talk to someone else, which is great. But I think it's very hard to do the fourth step by yourself and then come and have it all put together and present it to someone else. But some people do that. What's worked for me is to do, when I work with someone, we go through and we do all their resentments and we do all that and we look at all that information, then they do fears and then they do sex conduct, and in the meantime, we're doing the fifth step with it. It's not good or bad. I found that I get more out of it, and they seem to, it's worked for them. If it doesn't work, we can do it all at one time. It's hard to do the fourth step according to the big book by yourself. I think it really is. But if you do it in the pattern that it's laid out, it's so magnificent the way it can really show you the exact nature of yourself. It could show you the person you created that God didn't create. You could see how you caused yourself and others harmed. You could see the truth about all your anger. And you can see the truth about your fears. And you can look at your conduct in relationships and see it from a whole different angle, and it sets you free. And so the big book to me, the promises that come after the fourth and fifth step are just magnificent. And so it says, now these are going to be cast out. We want to cast out my self-centered characteristics, my self-centered personality. I want to cast it out. I don't want it to be active in my mind anymore. Why? Because I did the fourth step and it wasn't pretty. I mean, the things that I did and the harms I caused, it's not pretty. And I can forgive myself because I understood that I was running the show and my motives I thought were good, but I had the wrong director. I tried to fix the world so I could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of it, but I had the wrong director, and it was me. And so I could see that, you know, I wasn't a bad person. I just had motives that were, I thought were good, but they weren't. They were all self-centered. So I don't want to live that way anymore. So it says now they're going to be cast out, which is step 6 and 7. 6 and 7 are the steps that change. I think a lot of people don't make it because they don't live 6 and 7 every day. They don't understand that whenever they're bothered by anything that happens, their self-centered characteristics are coming into play, and they have to ask God to change the way they behave and act differently. And if you do that long enough, you begin to act differently almost automatically, and you change the way you see things. So 6 and 7 is something you do your whole life. You can say you're selfish. I've had people tell me that, and they believe it. But until you actually put the names and put how your selfishness caused your behavior and caused you to be angry and caused you to harm people, you can see it. When you can actually see the specific things that you did out of fear, because you were afraid, you did all these things to fix the fear and to manage the world and the harms you did to others, yourself, how you were full of fear all the time. You acted on that, you got angry, and then you had bad actions. When you can actually see it then you know what selfishness means. You know what being dishonest means. When you could see how you were dishonest in relationships because of fear, and you stayed in relationships, and then you harmed yourself and others even worse. And so it's not a horrible thing to do. It's just people don't want to do it because they think it's so complicated. But it's not hard to write down the people you've been angry at your whole life and why you're angry. And it's not hard to look and see how these characteristics came out. It's not very hard to look at your fears and see how you're managing the world, how you're trying to fix your fear to get what you want. And in your conduct inventory, it's not hard to look at your relationships and see how these things came into play. For the sex inventory, conduct inventory, there are about 8 or 9 questions. And that's where inconsiderate comes in. Were you inconsiderate with the world and people in it? So when you completed this, you have admitted to God, to yourself. Now, theoretically, along to the big book, you've already admitted it to yourself when you've done the inventory. And you've admitted to God because he's with you. But the key to success is to admit it to another human being. And it says here, the exact nature of our defects. I've been at meetings where people talk about, oh, they had to admit all the terrible, sinful things and all this stuff. And that may be good. It's not confession, the fifth step. It's being able to seek the truth about your personality and your relationship with the world and God and others. And it's the exact nature of your defects. So like Joe and Charlie make the point, all right, you committed adultery 100 times, so you're exhausted. But well, they said they're exhausted, but So you're exhausted, but we don't care how many times you committed adultery. We care about the nature of your personality that caused you to have that behavior. If you robbed the bank 100 times, well, that's pretty bad. But why did you rob the bank? What is the exact nature of your defects? It says the exact nature of our wrongs, defects, shortcomings, mistakes. These are the characteristics of a self-centered personality. And these are the things that trigger us to be angry, fearful, and to harm others. So the big book, the way the program's laid out is you start with, I'm angry at him. And why am I angry at him? And he's a horrible person. And look what he did to me. And blah, 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 blah. You hear it at meetings a lot. And you go on and on and on. But the truth is that he threatens me in some way. And because I'm in self-will. And then I pray and I say, God, save me from being angry and give me a loving, tolerant view. And then I say, I forgive him, I love him, he's okay. And then I say, why was I that way? So you start from the outward manifestation. And then you say, well, B, I'm just so selfish and I'm fearful. He triggers some fear in me. I think he's better than me, so I'm going to hate him because I think he's better than me. I don't know if alcoholics can understand that. But am I the only one? Yeah, but I mean, you know, or he's a certain way, he's threatening, he's going to take something away from me, blah, blah, blah. And so that's how the process is. You start with the manifestations, it says in the big book of self, right? What are the manifestations of a life run on self-will? And it says resentment's the number one offender, right? Then fear, and then inventory our conduct and sex and then other relationships. So that's how it comes to be. And you take the information about my personality, and that's what I want to change. If I don't change my personality, nothing's going to change. I'll still be angry, fearful, and I'm going to harm people. And I can't change my personality on my own. I have to have God change my personality. And we talked about destroying the ego. The ego starts to be destroyed when I recognize manifestations of the ego and how they're wrong and how they're harming me and others and they're separating me from God. So I don't want to pay attention to the ego anymore. And I want to say, ego, we're not going to go that way. I want to be a different person. I want to practice a different way. And so I let go of this and give it to God, and God changes us. So I can't do 6 and 7 till I've actually looked at this. Now, the key thing is that I have to admit it to another person. Why? Because if I do my inventory on my own, I won't see the truth of it. They'll stay really bad. They may get worse the more I write. I won't be able to see how I was threatened. I may say the prayer, and then my mistakes will seem minor compared to theirs. Anybody relate to that? I can't see the truth of it. The most powerful thing for me, and I could see myself sitting there in my family room with a certain person, and they went on for 20 minutes about their father. And in about 5 minutes, you could look at that and say, did he do the best he could? He was an alcoholic. Did he have any power to do differently? Did he go to work? Did he try to give you, you know, and you can change and you can see their faces as they're being able to see this person that they've really hated for so long and see that maybe it's not true. It's distorted in their mind. And to me, and it happened to me when I did it, my inventory, these things that I was convinced I could see my mistakes in it, I could see things differently. And then when you do that, you're free of it. They don't have the power. You don't have the power of the resentment or the fear anymore. And people who've done it can relate to that. But if I don't admit it to somebody else, I can't see the truth. Because I'm seeing it with an alcoholic mind. Now, you've been to discussion meetings where someone has a good resentment going. And I mean, you say, my God, wow, look at that resentment. You should shoot that person and you know, execute them. And oh, my God. And well, we don't get the whole story, right? And then people will tell me how they're right or this or that. But it's not true. You can't see it yourself. Your alcoholic mind has distorted things so you can blame others for your behavior. And we don't want to live like that anymore. Now, next week, hopefully, it depends on if we finish the next two pages or not. We're going to look at the steps we took by Joe on chapter 5 on the fifth step. Powerful stuff. And we'll read that and go through that on how we live on the truth. So steps 4 and 5 is to be able to see the truth. Because if I see the truth, I won't be living on a lie. And I need to see the truth about alcohol before I drink, right? So to be able to do that, I have to see the truth about my fear and my conduct and my anger. So it says, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. I didn't find it that difficult. I found it freeing. If you're miserable enough and you really are sick and tired of living the way you are, you're really anxious to get this stuff done, and you're free. The more you see, the more free you are. It says, we think we have done well in admitting these things to ourselves, but remember, we have an alcoholic mind. There's doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further, and especially if you put it on paper so that someone can look at what you've written and you can see whether it's true or not. Joe and Charlie made the point that all of our resentments are not true. They can start in truth, but we've distorted them and we've changed it. And so they say it's like an NFL replay machine. The guy gets hurt, and then you keep replaying the hit over and over and over, and it changes. And so you can't see the truth. It says we'll be reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. Here's a good reason. If you skip this step, you're going to die. It says if we skip this vital step, vital means necessary for life. I think it's true. First of all, how can you go on with the rest of your life if you haven't really been able to look at your mind when you come in here? This is called the personal house cleaning. You're looking at your alcoholic mind so you can see it, so it doesn't have power over you anymore. And then you'll need to be able to do this so each day when Phil gets something bothering him, he can say, you know, I do it too. When we get fearful, I say, well, there you go again, Michael. You're running that area of your life. It's not even true. It's not even happening now. What a waste of time. How's that working for you? And so you just say, God, how should I be? Remove my fear. But you can't do that. You can't live a spiritual life till you've done 4 and 5 because you don't have the tools. You're learning the truth about yourself, but you're also learning how, when you get angry, what do you have to do? What's the spiritual exercise you take to be free of it? You learn how, when you're fearful, what's the spiritual steps you have to take to be free of the fear? And you want to be able to look at your conduct. You don't want to harm people anymore. And then you remember, we do that at night. It says on page 86, at night when we retire, we look and see where we were resentful, to selfish, dishonest, or afraid. What could we have done different? Were we kind and loving towards all, right? And we want to live during the day. It says we watch during the day. We ask God it wants to remove it, and then it says we discuss it with someone immediately. So you're doing 4 and 5 every day, every minute. And it says, if we don't do this, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they've gotten drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. Now, it doesn't say you have to do a perfect job at all, but you have to be honest, and you have to try to be thorough. And it says they took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. Now here's two powerful lines. The next three lines, I think, for me, explain why a lot of people relapse all the time. It says they only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. How do you lose your egoism and fear? How do you lose the power of the ego over you? How do you lose your power that fear has over you? They only thought they had humbled themselves. So if you haven't humbled yourself, then you're still running the show yourself. They have not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary. And those are the qualities that are required, essential requirements. It says honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, right? These are essential, right? And fearlessness, in the sense we find it necessary to tell someone else all their life story. Now, Joe and Charlie make the point that they're not talking about writing your whole life story, where you went to high school, if you played football, did you score a touchdown, were you in the band? They're talking about the life story in your head as the way you've seen your life. And it's a story. And a lot of times it's fiction. It's a fictional story. How you saw your childhood, how you saw your relationships with your parents, with your loved ones, with others. And it's a story, and you want to see the truth about the story. And the story we look at is our resentments, our fears, and our conduct in relationships, so that we can see the truth about it. And if you're holding on to some resentment you won't let go, and you're not honest about it, then that might be the next drink. And if you're holding on to fears and you're not honest about them and you won't share and look at them, that could be the next drink. And if you continue to harm people, then you're going to have shame and guilt, and that could be the next drink. And so it doesn't say you have to do it perfectly. You just have to do the best you can at the time. Now, I've heard Linda and some others say it. You can only do what you can do at a certain point. You can only see so much through God when you're ready. But when you're ready, give it the best shot. And then 6 months later, something else will come. You're more spiritually ready, and you'll be able to see that. And God won't give you too much to handle. I believe that. But you have to do your best effort, because it says more will be revealed. This is just the beginning, remember? And it says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. That's true. We're always trying to tell everybody how good we're doing, right? Yeah. We're screaming and yelling at home all day long, and we come in here and life's great, right? Or we're rude and we're mean, or we're fearful, or we're angry all the time. But we want everybody to think we're okay, because it's very important how I look to the world. But I have to be honest about how I'm really feeling and what things are happening if I'm going to be able to have a spiritual life. And so we're very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents a stage character. Did anybody do this? Anybody work with people who have done that? We do it. You'll see, we haven't had it for a while, but we'll have a new person come in. And they'll come in, they'll introduce themselves, and they'll tell us how they're not that bad. They didn't get a DUI. They still have a job. They still have a car. They're still at home. They haven't been kicked out yet. And why are they telling us that? Because they want us to think they're not that bad. But there's a reason they came here. It wasn't because things are going great. And you see, they're in a delusion. And so it's very good when you can give up how you see yourself to the outer world. You just want to be okay. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but he knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is, now here they're talking about the things you do when you drink, and you keep drinking. The inconsistency when you're sober with this character is made worse when you come to your sprees. And then you remember these horrible things you did. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light and day. He is under constant fear and tension. Now, are you under fear and tension? Ask yourself that. Are you under fear and tension today? You know, if you're under fear and tension today, then you're not connected to God. And if you're under fear and tension long enough, people will drink. And it says that. That makes for more drinking. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. But we don't want to tell people the truth. You know, you're paying them $100 an hour, but you don't really want to tell them the truth. A lot of people go to therapists. They're really alcoholics, but they talk about, you know, their resentments or things. They don't let the guy know that you're drunk every night and you're drinking. You know, we don't want them to know that. It's too much information. We know of a few instances where we've given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. It says, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this infinite and confidential step. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course, will want to go through the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained. We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. I'm going to read one more paragraph and then we'll open up, and then we'll finish this next week. If we cannot or would not rather do this, we search for acquaintance, for a closed-mouth, understanding friend. You want somebody that you really feel comfortable, that you can tell them something, and they'll take it to the grave, and they're not going to judge you. And I didn't mention your...
Uh-huh.
I didn't mention...
Well, you were almost...
Calm down. If you carry on, I'm going to tell everybody. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. It may be one of our own family, but we could not disclose anything to our wives or our parents, which will hurt them and make them unhappy. Don't do your fist step with your spouse. Please. But it might be helpful. They're going to find a lot of more information that you're going to share. It says we have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. Such parts, you know, that's the key. We're just trying to clear our part of the street. We don't want to harm any more people. That's a spiritual principle. And we don't want to do anything that will hurt people and make them unhappy. And we don't want to save our own skin at another's expense. Some parts of our story we tell someone who will understand, yet be affected. The rule is we must be harming ourselves, but always consider of others. And that's true of the way we're supposed to live every day. These are spiritual principles. And then we're going to open it up. When they wrote this book, there were 50 people sober. There wasn't a lot of people to do fist steps with. And so they were going to send this book all over the country for people to work. So they wanted to give you the information so you could find somebody to do it with. Now, today, there are plenty of people you can find and to do this. And the thing is anybody grateful they're in AA and they're sober?
Yes.
Is anybody grateful the gifts of AA?
Yes.
Well, if you want to prove it, sponsor somebody. Help somebody get to the path to God. And I mean, that will tell you if you're really grateful. Are you working one-on-one with somebody and trying to help them? And then, of course, you're going to help yourself. And then if you don't think you've done a good enough fourth or fifth step, just keep working with people. And then you'll be doing your fourth or fifth step while you're doing it with them, because you're going to see things in your resentments and fears are going to come up and harms you did others. So that's my thought on that. That's enough preaching.
Right.
Now I have to turn it off.
Uh-oh.
No,
that's bad.